This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. According to the Pew Research Center, 1.2 million American Latinos who identified as some other race in 2000 identified as white in 2010 on the U.S. Census. Should we raise our eyebrows and clutch our pearls at that fact, or should we just not be surprised? When you look at American history, you see that whiteness is an elastic abstract, not grounded in fact. Becoming white has happened before with the Irish, Italians, Eastern Europeans, and others. And we invite you to join the conversation. What is white? Were you once white? White and then became non-white or vice versa? Call in. We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. And you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. Our guest this half hour, Nell Irvin Painter, historian of note, professor emeritus at Princeton, and author of many books. One of them is The History of White People, and Harriet Romo, professor of sociology at the University of Texas at San Antonio and director of the UTSA Mexico Center, co-author of the textbook Racial and Ethnic Relations in America. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Nell Painter, let me ask you, why is it important that we ask this question, what is whiteness?
Well, if you're looking at the census changes every 10 years, and it's a political document. It's not a scientific document. Race is not a scientific biological concept. It's social, it's political. And I want to correct one thing you said in your intro. It's not so much a question of becoming white, because people like the Irish immigrants and Italian immigrants and so forth, all kinds of European immigrants, were always recognized as being white. But there were many white races, and some of them were inferior, and one of them was superior. Sometimes it was called Saxon, sometimes it was called Anglo-Saxon. In the early 20th century, it was called Nordic, and Nordic was an early 20th century invention that allowed the Irish to go from being an inferior white race, that is the Celts, to being a superior white race, that is the Nordics.
And so that just shows you that this is a very fluid type of category. And, yes. and grounded in whatever we need to have happen at the time.
It's who we are, to whom we are speaking, for what purpose, and when. So, for instance, in the American South, the land of black slavery, the black-white dichotomy meant that people in other parts of the United States, say people of Jewish background or Italian background or Irish background, who were considered inferior races in, say, Boston or Philadelphia, were enfolded into white even in the 19th century. So, in a sense, you could say in the 20th century, the Southern way of thinking moved national. But things keep changing. And since about the 1960s, with an influx of people who were considered Hispanic or Latino, we've had to move to a two-tiered system. So when you filled out your census report in 2010, you were asked two things. One was, well, you were asked lots of things, but one was, what is your ethnicity? And that is Hispanic or non-Hispanic. And then what is your race? Black, white, Asian, Asian Pacific, and so on and so forth. So things keep changing. For what purpose? To whom, where, and when?
All right, let's get Harriet Romo in on this conversation. Of course, everyone knows her as a professor over at the University of Texas at San Antonio. So, Harriet, so when we see these numbers of Latinos self-identifying more as white, what does that tell you?
Well, the category Hispanic has been problematic for Latinos for a long time because as the different census categories changed, for a while they were Spanish Americans, then they were Spanish speaking, and then a lot of people resented the fact that the Hispanic category was a kind of a government imposed category, and if people identified more with Latin America rather than the Hispanic Iberian Peninsula, you know, that left them in a flux of what to identify as also. And I agree wholeheartedly with Nell Painter, and congratulations on your new book, about how these ethnic identities change as people age. You know, they might change. Like 10 years is a big jump. If you were a college student and involved in a Latino student organization, you might feel more strongly than 10 years later. If you're a young professional on a, you know, a career upward mobile trajectory, you might feel like you have to call yourself something different. But also, just there's been lots of really interesting sociological work on these categories. And there's a good book by James Davis, Who is Black? You know, going back to the time when people identified black as having one drop of blood. How can you determine, you know, which drop of your blood is of what right. ethnic group? And yes, the same yes. thing happened with Native Americans, you know, where you had the census takers would go out to the reservations and identify who was a full-blooded or a half-blooded or no blood Native American. And so these have been very politicized, very controversial categories throughout our history in the United States. And Mary Waters has an interesting book called Ethnic Options, where she talks about the way that some groups who, like Nell was talking about, you know, who have maybe lighter skin color have a little bit more flexibility in how they can identify, and others who tend to be placed in categories by the way other people perceive them and have less flexibility in how they identify. But for Hispanics, they really feel strongly about their own origin of the group, you know, like if they came from Puerto Rico or if they came from Mexico or they came from Cuba or one of the countries in Central America or Latin America, that's a more salient identity than a general term like Hispanic. And so when they're forced to choose, and they were before, between white and black, well, maybe they don't consider themselves black, so they'll choose white. But if you're Puerto Rican and you have African ancestry, or you're Nicaraguan or Cuban and you have Caribbean African descendancy, you might choose black and you're Hispanic as well. So it's a very complex process. It is socially constructed. There are no pure races. There's no biological grounding, really, for trying to identify categories of people. That there's been so much intermixing, intermarriages, especially today. You have people who have grandparents of two different ethnic groups, and their parents are two different ethnic groups. And so what do the kids identify with?
So it's constantly changing, and it's interesting to look at, because if it's not static, what does it mean, especially when it has been grounded in law at some points in our history, and continues to be an issue that we talk about today in terms of opportunities and where we're going with certain policies. We're going to continue this conversation talking about what is white, and I want you to join the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're going to be right back after this one-minute break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about what is white and how do there's different forms of white, and how do they become good or bad, or what does it all mean? Our guest we have with us this afternoon, Harriet Romo, professor of sociology at the University of Texas at San Antonio, and Nell Irvin Painter. She's a noted historian, professor emeritus at Princeton University, author of The History of White People. And you, we invite your phone calls. Number is 210-614-8980. Now let's get to the phones. Catherine has called in. Catherine, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. My family is very common in San Antonio. I have a father whose family is from Mexico and a mother who is white. And as a young person, I identified myself as Hispanic, especially having a Hispanic last name, though I am blue-eyed and pale-skinned. And then I married and took my husband's last name, and he is very white, and continued to identify myself as Hispanic until I had children. And I felt, I'm not sure why, I started checking more often that my ethnicity is Hispanic and my race is white, because I feel that I have children who are only a quarter Hispanic, and that somehow, I guess, changes things in my brain. I very much identify with what you were saying, is how things shift is what's going on in your life.
Catherine, thank you for that, telling us all about that. That's very interesting. Appreciate that. So, Harriet Romo, do you think that Catherine is all that unique?
No, she's not. In fact, in my sociology classes, when I teach about race and ethnic relations, I often have students put a little tag on their chest that just has their name, and the students have to walk around and identify what they think the ethnic group is of the person, all the other classmates, and then each person has underneath that what they call themselves or what they consider themselves, and people's own self-classification becomes very complex based on exactly what Catherine told us, you know, their family background, people that they particularly identified and maybe ignored other groups in their background. But then they're also conscious and very much made aware of how other people perceive them and the categories that people put them in just because of the way they look. Like if she's very blonde, or people might say, you know, what, you're Mexican? And so those kinds of reactions cause people to rethink how they can conceptualize their own ethnic identity. Sometimes they come out much stronger and much more adamant about who they are and decide to go and explore the ethnic background of their family and identify very strongly with their ethnic group over time. And sometimes it goes the opposite way, too. So it's a really complex issue, and it's important for us as sociologists because we want to follow what's happening in terms of discrimination or exclusion, particularly in things like educational achievement or income disparities. But we know that these categories are not fixed, that they're not, that they're very difficult to work with.
Right. So, Nell Painter, mm-hmm. isn't having these categories, especially throughout history, they have been a tool of the establishment. I know that in Texas in 1923, the legislature passed having a whites-only Democratic primaries, which, of course, mm-hmm. was in Reconstruction was the only primary that mattered. And so it was a way to use eliminate people from the political roles.
You're absolutely right. But first, let me just say that I agree with what Harriet Romo said entirely. I'd like in a moment to come back to the terminology ethnic and race and insert class, but let me answer your question. By and large, racial designations have been used to sublimate people, but at the same time, they can be embraced, as some of us remember from the 20th century and the Black Power moment, of black is beautiful. And so when I was a kid, the word for black people, the respectable word, was Negro. And it was very often seen as an insult if you called someone black. But by the 60s and 70s, we embraced black. And so group identity can be a very strong source of strength, of community building. So it isn't entirely useful. It isn't useful only for oppression.
Yes, and now, the same thing happened with the Latinos and the Chicano movement. And it's regional, too, because in California mm-hmm. in the 1960s, Chicano was very a very proud identity.
Yeah.
And at the same time, some of the people in Texas were saying that was a derogatory term and they didn't want to use it. They preferred to be Mexican-Americans or Spanish-Americans.
Well, that happened in California also.
Yeah.
Generational.
Right. And then we had the problem with the Voting Rights Act, and we had to expand it later to include Hispanics and Mexican-Americans in Texas because they were a class apart. They weren't black, but they weren't considered white either.
Right.
Well, there was a law passed in Texas, I think in the 40s, 50s, 30s, Harriet, maybe you can tell me, that said that people of Mexican descent were white. But that may not have been honored all the time. But what I'd really like to do is move us in two directions. One, when Harriet spoke, she used the word ethnicity. And this is a word that has come to the fore since about the 1970s. It is not possible to distinguish between ethnicity and race. And the fact that she used ethnicity is telling us more about what the accepted terminology is now. So I think ethnicity is growing, And race, while still very powerful, has to make space for ethnicity as well. The second thing is, as the laws have retreated and as our society opens up more for people who were stigmatized by race, we now see class becoming so much more important, almost standalone, but also as a signifier for race and ethnicity. So, for instance, Harriet Romo said that other people can assign an ethnicity or an identity based on how you look. Part of how you look is what class you look like you belong to. Right.
All right. I want to get some of the callers on the air. Ralph is called in. Ralph, welcome to The Source.
Hello. Thank you. It's good to hear you, Harriet. It's more, and I agree totally with what y'all are saying, but it has a lot to do with assimilation versus transformation. And the immigrant early on had to assimilate into American society. But nowadays, the strong immigrants from the past histories and now are bringing the best of their culture, their traditions, and their heritage into making America a better country. So there's a lot of us who will not assimilate into the white structure. Others, darker-skinned Hispanics, will call themselves white. Lighter-skinned Hispanics may call themselves Hispanics. It doesn't really matter. It's all about, like you said, class. And we're in an economic struggle, and it'll continue until we get parity. So that's why a lot of us are very focused on transforming without losing our identity.
Okay, Ralph, great points. I'm going to get to Harriet on that question. So when people say they transform or self-identify now as white, but does that mean they've given up their Latinoism?
Not necessarily. I mean, people may change their identity in a different context. If they're with their family and they're here in San Antonio at a picnic in Breckenridge Park on Easter, you might very strongly call yourself Latino or Chicano or Mexican-American. But if you're if you're filling out an official form and the categories don't really fit what you think you are, as Nell described in the beginning, the changes and how you have to select initially in previous censuses between white and black, you might check something there that really doesn't apply to how you would identify in another context. And I think that it is true that class is making a big difference. And the issue, back to something that Nell said earlier, too, of how the terminology of white has been used, when schools were desegregated in Texas, some of the schools then decided to call Mexican Americans white, and they desegregated schools by busing Mexican American kids to black schools. And the same issue comes up when you're redistricting or you're looking at the ethnic composition of voting districts. You know, who is white and who is Latino and who is black and all these other groups makes a difference politically in terms of power, in terms of resources, in terms of just participation fully in American society.
Okay, another caller, Patrick. Patrick, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. In the mid-1990s, the state of California started a statewide effort to automate their welfare and Medi-Cal files from paper-based to computer-based. I was hired as a contract employee in my local county at the time to help with the effort. There were codes designating the major ethnic groups, and you would input the code based on the information in the file. However, for example, one parent was white and one parent was black and they had children, there was no code to reflect that.
Sure, no mixed race, defining mixed race in America. That's
nothing. There was no.
Got it.
I guess subcode. There was just the major code.
Let me pass it on to. Thank you, Patrick, for your comments. Remember, Nell Painter. What do you think about that?
Patrick is absolutely right, and so the census in 2000 said that people could choose many races. So by 2000, you could be some other race, which a lot of Latinos chose.
but also you could be more than one race. So this produced a chaotic system. And so for me, if I checked, and I did check these things, I would check for ethnicity, non-Hispanic, for race, black, and then I would be black alone because I didn't choose some other race as well. So the system is really getting very, very complicated, and it is going to bog down. It probably already has bogged down. The people, there are two kinds of people who want us, no, there's one kind of people, basically, who want us to keep keeping tally, and that is people who want social equity to try to make sure that, say, funding goes to people who need it, which is a proxy for black. But the conservatives are the people who say we should just do away with it. We should do away with affirmative action. We should do away with all kinds of racial designations. So it's still very political, and you'd be surprised at where the push to keep racial designations comes from.
Right, yeah. But just yesterday we were talking about how people were targeted as they drove across Texas. If they were a minority, they would be pulled over by police officers and maybe suffer from asset forfeiture. And so and you become – this information is useful to figure out who gets targeted, who gets redlined.
Yes, but that kind of thing is eyeballing. And, in fact, in everyday life, most racial assigning is eyeballing. So the police are not sitting there with your own census return from 2010.
Right.
They're looking at you, and they're seeing a dark person in a car that looks vulnerable.
All right. Nell Painter, thank you so much for joining us. Professor of Emeritus at Princeton University, historian, author of The History of White People, and Harriet Romo over at UTSA. This is The Source on KSTX.